Welcome to the Anderson Business Advisors Podcast, the nationally recognized preferred provider for asset protection and tax planning in the nation. This show is for investors and business owners looking to save on taxes and build long-term wealth with Toby Mathis, an attorney, author, business owner, and a featured instructor at Anderson's Tax and Asset Protection event held throughout the country. Enjoy the show.
Hey guys, this is Toby Mathis with Jeff Webb again.
Good afternoon.
And if you don't know, Jeff Webb's the tax manager here, and I am one of the partners. I'm not an accountant, but I'm an attorney. Jeff is actually a CPA. And this is Tax Tuesdays. If you've never been on Tax Tuesdays before, all we do is answer all sorts of questions. If we can't answer the question that you ask, it's too complicated, too specific, too long, then I grab it and kick it off to a staff, or we answer it in the following week. We're going to go through these, and we're going to make sure that we're answering all these questions. Will the income I earn by lending money to my real estate investors reduce my Social Security benefits or increase my taxes on them? Interesting question. There's how to get a 20% deduction, or how do I? When you make a contribution, funds out of your own account to your LLC as a member, are you taxed on contributions that you contribute to an LLC? What is the best structure recommended against asset structure and personal protection for multifamily home investor acquiring and holding rental properties, especially if work? And I'm going to go through each one of these. What is the best way to set up QuickBooks when I have a Wyoming holding LLC and several other LLCs holding real estate in various other states? All right, so those are our opening questions. We have a few more. We're going to go through a ton of them. First question, will the income earned by lending money to real estate investors reduce my Social Security benefits or increase my taxes on them? So the first thing is there's the benefit itself. And in this particular question, I looked it up and I believe they were 61. So they were receiving Social Security benefits before they reached the full retirement age. Full retirement age varies between 65 and 67. The reason this is important is because once you reach that age, it doesn't matter what you make. Until you reach that age, you will have your benefits reduced on what you're receiving when you're pulling out Social Security early, 50 cents on the dollar once you get over $17,080. It's indexed for inflation, but it's a little bit over $17,000. I think this year it's 17,080 or something like that. What that means is if you are lending money, then that would be counted as income. However, if you're under the full retirement age, they only count earned income. And so the question here is, until you're at full retirement age, will the income earned by lending money to real estate investors reduce my Social Security benefits or increase my taxes on them? The answer is a big resounding no. This will not hurt you in any way. Once you hit full retirement age, now we have to be worried about how much of your Social Security becomes taxable. Or actually before that as well.
Yeah, it's going to matter.
Yeah. When they look at your taxability of the benefit, now we're looking at all sorts of income, everything that you make, and it's going to push it up. And so that's the one where it's not that you reduce the benefit, but it becomes taxable.
Yeah. So, I mean, fairly quickly, additional income starts making your Social Security benefits taxable. They're never going to be more taxed at more than 85% of your benefits are never going to be taxable.
What it means is that the most they're ever going to tax your benefits is 85% of them. So if you're getting $20,000 of benefit, the most you'll ever pay tax on is $17,000. You'll still get $3,000 tax free. The sad part is you didn't get really a deduction when they took it out in the first place.
Right.
So that's the old double tax that you hear about with Social Security.
Just the matter of when you should take Social Security is such a huge question.
Yeah, because you can start taking it. When's the earliest?
Is it 61? I want to say 62, but maybe it's earlier for depending on their age.
It does depend on their age. And so there is a before a threshold and after a threshold. And I forget what the threshold is. You know, what you do is you go to the Social Security Administration and you run your scenarios and they'll give them all to you. Or you can contact us. We have folks we can send you out to that have the software. Because it is complicated, depending on what month you were born in and all that stuff, how many days, all of this gets factored in as to what's the earliest you can start receiving benefits. Once you start receiving the benefit, they let you receive that benefit only so long as your income is low. and it's your earned income. So if you're trying to get the benefit when you're 62 and you make too much money, you're going to lose a bunch of the benefit. If you're 62, you start pulling out the benefit and you have passive income, not that big of a deal. It doesn't reduce it. So that's really cool. Enough of that. Makes my head hurt. Social Security. Do not rely on Social Security. Here, there I'll say. Yeah, Social Security is one of those things that when it was set up, the average life expectancy of people on Social Security was 2 years. It was really there to catch you if you were really old and didn't have any other benefits. Now we use it almost like it's a retirement plan. That's not what it was intended for. That's why it doesn't work to do it. Here's the next one. How do I get the 20% deduction from Trump's tax plan? Well, first off, it's not Trump's tax plan.
I wasn't going to say that,
but go ahead. It's the Tax Cut and Jobs Act, and it was passed by our wonderful Congress, because technically, though they seem to forget this, presidents don't write laws. Okay, now we get that out of the way. They did put this thing called a 199A deduction, which is a 20% deduction on qualified business income from pass-through entities. So follow me here. First thing we need to have is we need to have a pass-through entity. And you can be an LLC taxed as, this is a 1065, that's a partnership, a sole proprietor, a C-corp. No, excuse me. C-corp doesn't work.
No.
Or as an S-corp. Those are your choices. Technically, it could also be a trust. Then you look at other entities, S-corps, and just flat-out partnerships, including limited partnerships, all that fun stuff. So it's passing through. It doesn't pay its own tax. Then you need qualified business income. I'm just going to call it QBI, which is just means income. Generally speaking, it's active income, but they also include real estate. If you are making money on real estate in which you participate in some fashion. So the only type of real estate that's not included as far as we can tell, because they're still giving us regulations on it, but the proposed regulations make clear that real estate, rental real estate's included, is if you have a commercial building and it's triple net leases that you're giving out where you're not really taking on much of the risk, then they don't let you have the qualified business income. Then they compare that qualified business income, 20% deduction versus 20% of your taxable income, whichever's less. Why is this important? Because if I'm a sole proprietor, let's say I have $50,000 that I'm making net, I would get a $10,000 deduction under the QBI. But let's say that I take and I contribute into my retirement plan, husband and wife, sole proprietors, still the same thing, and they both put in, what's a good number? Let's just say $10,000. Mm-hmm. Then my taxable income is actually $40,000 because I wrote off, I made tax deductible contributions into my IRA of $10,000. So I would take the lesser of that. Then they do this wonderful thing. They then say, well, if it's a special service company, we're going to put a cap on how much QBI you can actually make. And it's really not QBI. It's actually your taxable income. And they say, we'll only let you write off so long as your taxable income is below a threshold. If you're single, that threshold is $157,500. And there's a phase out over the next $50,000. So to make your head spin, it goes from $157,000 to $207,500. Now, that's the easiest way to look at it. If you're married filing jointly, those numbers are $315,000 to $415,000.
So what's an example of special service?
Yep. Special services are something that it is you and your skill that makes the money. And they use, it's going to be doctors, lawyers, accountants, engineers, real estate agents who are solo, somebody who it's their skill. So like a carpenter who doesn't have a bunch of staff, that's going to be a special service. And if you get above those thresholds, you are done. A single member LLC counts. So like it would flow onto you. So that's when you're sole proprietor or just going onto your tax return. That's a pass-through entity. So you're fine. The interesting thing here is that you can control your taxable income. So even on those thresholds, and when we teach this in the class, we actually go through kind of a learning chart where we say, if this, then this, if this, then this. So if you're special service, we just need to make sure that we can control your income. And the way you control your income is by splitting it with tax-free or tax-exempt or separately taxable entities. So let me give you an example. If I have a C corp and it makes a bunch of money, great. That's not income to me. I don't want to pay myself a whole bunch of money and make whatever my other business is that is where I'm underneath the threshold taxable because I'm losing that 20% deduction. So let's say I have $200,000 coming in as an individual. I can get some donations and deductions from into a retirement plan, and I get myself underneath that 157, and I have another $200,000 in a C corp that I can pay myself. If I leave the 157 as is and I don't take any money out of the C corp, I'm going to get a 30-some-odd-thousand-dollar deduction. It's just going to come off the top. It's a 20% deduction. It's almost like I spent it. If I took the money out of the C corp, and by the way, that C corp is at a flat 21% tax rate now. Mm-hmm. So it's going to pay 21%. So like that's, it's not horrific. But if I paid myself that money, I push my taxable income over the threshold, and now I get zero deduction on my qualified business income. So that's why it's important. If it is not a special service, then those thresholds trigger something else. It takes us to an area where we can write off up to 50% of the W-2 income or 25% of the W-2 income for the business. Plus 2.5% of the assets. So what we're looking at then is you better have a regular business that actually has salaries. If you, for example, as a sole proprietor, single, are making $200,000 and you're over the threshold, you're phasing out, you would end up with, you'd have to go to the second test. You're over the 157 and the second test is now pushing you to that 50% of W-2 wages and you have zero. So your deduction is going to be zero. You're going to get literally nothing. You might get a few dollars because you're not quite at the 207, which is the top line of the actual phase out. So you'd be phased out about 90%+ of the benefit. Now, let's say you converted that sole proprietorship to an S corp, and instead you paid yourself a salary. So same situation, $200,000. Let's say it paid you $75,000 of salary. Then the QBI, the monies that's flowing through, is actually the net income, the net profit. So you'd subtract the 75 off. So it would be 125,000.
Right.
You'd get, so you'd compare 20% of that number.
25,000.
Yeah, 25,000. And we would compare it to one half of the W-2 income, which would be 37,500. So you get the lesser of the two. You get a $25,000 deduction just because of the type of entity. So that's the one I have to do. Somebody just said, I have almost 300K in real estate and other income. Is there anything I can do? Single person? Yeah, there's something you can do. Because remember, it depends on whether you're special service, and then it depends on the business. And there's a one last thing. It always comes down to your taxable income. What other ways can I use to control my taxable income? The most obvious is I split it with a C corp. I give it to charity, and it could be my charity. Or I donate it, not donate it. I deduct it by putting it into a tax deferred retirement plan. So for example, same situation, I'll use the 200,000 and they do a 401k and they put husband and wife each, they're under 50, they each contribute 18,500, or actually the example I used was a single person. So I guess I would have to say I put 18,500 in and then they get a 25% deduction on the 75,000. So they would put in, what would that be, about $18,750 or whatever that is, around another $19,000. So I can put, in essence, about $37,000 right into the 401k, and that reduces my taxable income. My taxable income goes from 200 down to almost the threshold. And now I don't have to worry about it. Makes my life so much easier. I'm just going to get a nice big fat deduction, and I'm happy as a clam. That's how this stuff works. But if you don't do it before the year end, you're toast. So this is going to be this is why you need to have some sort of somebody doing tax planning with you. So how do I get the 20% deduction from the new tax act? Very deliberately. You make sure that you have the income flowing under your return, and then you make sure that if there's a disqualifying factor that would cause you to lose it, that you look and say, what's better? To just walk away from it and not worry about it? Or would I be better to take a couple of actions to allow myself to take advantage of the deduction? It's a freebie, guys. It's if I make $20,000 in real estate, that rental real estate, that's my net after all my depreciation, I get a $4,000 deduction. I'm only recognizing $16,000 of it as taxable income. So that's a nice little benefit, especially if I'm a high income person. So that's what I'd be looking at. Jeff, do you want to do this one? Because I'm hobarting the answers again.
Oh, that's right. When you make a contribution out of your own account to your LLC as a member, are you taxed on contributions that you contribute to the LLC? And no, actually, you're not. That is a contribution to an entity that becomes your capital, your owner's equity. We can call a lot of things. Mm-hmm. Your owner's capital in that company. That's actually money that you can take back out also tax-free, assuming that you haven't used it up to recognize losses or maybe other things like that.
We get that a lot. So I'll give you a real life example. Some guys were doing a syndication on apartment buildings, and they were telling people, hey, we're going to return your capital out of the profits. And you're not going to have to pay any tax on the money that you receive up to your investment.
Right.
And I said, hey, that's not really the case. Here's how it works. I can always get back my contribution, and it's tax neutral, means nothing. So if the company makes zero, no profit, it can always give me back my money and I pay no tax. But if the company makes money, I'm taxed on my portion of that gain, no matter what, even if they're giving me extra, you know. So it's like what they were doing is saying, ah, here's a little thing. We'll make some profit and we'll just give you your money back. You want to pay tax on it. It's like, no, that's not how it works. You actually have to pay tax on the profit in proportion to your ownership. And it's a little bit funky.
And this is a case that sometimes we see where a client will tell us, well, I had deposits of $100,000 into my business. And what they fail to tell us is that $50,000 of it was their own money. So we want to make sure that we're able to differentiate what the owners are putting into the company versus what income they're making in the company.
Yep. All right. What is the best business structure recommended against asset structure and personal protection? I don't know what that means. I'm going to assume they mean to protect the business for a multifamily home investor acquiring and holding rental properties, especially if working as a team member with other investors. All right. Here's what I'm going to say. Anytime you have a passive activities, that is when you buy the property for the cash flow and the appreciation, you're going to want to use a passive entity, meaning an LLC taxed as a partnership or a limited partner. Don't do anything else. That's it. There's like some really weird exceptions, but I'm going to say 99% of the time, you're going to end up using an LLC, and it's either going to be disregarded to you, but if you have other people in it, it's going to be a partnership. Anybody does anything differently, they're doing some weird stuff. If you have other investors, then it depends on your relationship with those investors. I'm not going to get into securities and Reg D's and all that, but generally speaking, you're going to have it taxed as a partnership. But the most important consideration is always going to be control. Who has control of that entity? Because that's who decides what's distributed. That partnership agreement or the operating agreement of the LLC is really going to be important. You do not want to do this stuff half-arse. You want to make sure that you're actually really addressing this stuff. At Anderson, we tend to be very protective of the manager, meaning we want you to have control if it's your project. We don't want people to be able to force you to do stuff. And on the flip side, if you're investing and you're a client, we're always going to say you don't want to be forced to kick in more capital against your will. So those are the things we always look at. All right. What is the best way to set up QuickBooks when I have a wife? This is going to be so you, Jeff, because Jeff loves QuickBooks. Okay, what is the best way to set up QuickBooks when I have a Wyoming holding LLC with several other LLCs holding real estate in various other states? I'm going to draw this. There's my Wyoming LLC. It's either going to be a 1065 or disregarded, and it holds all these cute little LLCs in other states. So let's say this is Texas LLC, Washington LLC, Nevada LLC, Georgia LLC, and they're all owned and they flow up to that Wyoming. And I want to keep my books straight, because if you know QuickBooks, they will sell you QuickBooks for this one, this one, this one. You'll end up with four sets of QuickBooks and you'll drive yourself crazy. So what do you do, Jeff?
Here's what we like to do. We like to create one set of books with the Wyoming LLC at the top being the primary set of books. Then what we do is what we call a classified income statement, where each of these four LLCs below, the Georgia, Nevada, Washington, and Texas, where they're all kind of their own set of books within your Wyoming LLC books. All this income is going to flow from those bottom four up to the top one anyway. And while we need to keep the entities separate so we can report them that way, ultimately what we're reporting is what's coming through the whole kit and caboodle.
Yep. We only need to worry about setting up QuickBooks for this guy right here. And then we set up these guys as classes. And all that means is we have one set of books.
Yeah, so I mean, you can still pull an income statement for your Georgia LLC or your Texas LLC to see what's just in that. But all in all, you still have one set of books. It makes it easier with you don't have all these intercompany transfers you have to track.
I'll tell you, we're horrible on that. Yeah, give me the look. See, here's the problem is if you have different companies with different sets of books, you got to close out the previous set of books and then open up the new company.
Yeah.
It's a process and it takes a few minutes and it's really annoying when you're trying to enter stuff into it. So I'm going to save you a whole bunch of time. Use one set.
Yeah. Then you don't run into the thing. Well, I transferred money from Georgia to Texas, but I record it in both companies. And when you record it in one, you end up recording it in both.
Yeah. Hey, there's someone doing some fun stuff. Someone just asked a real basic QuickBooks question. I'm jumping the line. It's hard to set up classes in QuickBooks. Not horribly, but if you don't want to learn, like QuickBooks is one of those things where you're going to spend some time with it. You just have a bookkeeper do it. Yeah, Anderson does that if you want. All right. Can you go over the tax forms for 501c3?
Well, there's a couple forms for the 501c3. To apply to be a 501c3, there's what's called the Form 1023. It's the application to be an exempt charitable organization. Then there's several different yearly reporting forms. The 990 is the primary one where you report, among other things, what your income was, what your balance sheet looks like, your plan, your purpose, who you dealt
You're
with.
You're such an accountant.
What are you going to say? Come on.
No, you basically, if you're making less than $50,000 in your 501c3, you're doing a 990 post note card. You're just doing a real basic. Literally, it looks like a postcard.
Well, they don't do that anymore. All this old people still call postcards, but
they do the 10.
But it's a 990N and it's filed electronically.
I know, but it's the same.
It's a postcard. Okay.
It's the postcard. Oh my God. Yeah. You do it electronically now, but it's really simple. You go above that, then you're going to be filing a little more detailed. You get above 250, you're filing very detailed.
Right.
Never do it yourself. Just hire an accountant to do it. And there's guys, I mean, we do them. They're not horrifically complicated unless you have a huge board that everybody's taking money. So you go to the American Red Cross, you can go look at the actual tax forms that everybody files because they're all public record. You can go in there and take a look at anybody's and see what, you know, just how complicated it is. What you'll realize is that the more the stuff they're doing, the more complicated it gets. They're not doing a ton. It's pretty simple. We have ones that are $5 million nonprofits and it's a few pages. Then you have ones that are $1 million, but they got everybody and their mother with their hands in the in the thing, and you're doing a lot of reporting, and that one might be more complicated. If you're a church, you don't file anything. So if you're religious and you're a religious organization, you don't file anything. You file zero tax forms.
And when you have an accountant do these 990s for you, they're going to ask you a lot of questions because there's a lot of questions on the form that they don't have the answer to, basically about what it is the nonprofit does and things like that.
All right. If someone has rentals in there, basically, again, if you have the tax forms, this is one other thing, Maria, is that's the tax compliance on an annual basis. If you're setting up a 501c3, you are doing more than likely, 501c3 is an application called a 1023. If you're doing a 501c6 or some of these others, that's a 1024. Those are applications for exempt status. Your business, your nonprofit is in existence and it's considered exempt from day one. Even though you haven't gotten your exemption approved, you actually have, it's like 28 or 29 months to get approved, and it relates back to the day that you started. So you can actually do a 501c3 and be up and running in a matter of weeks if you want to be. All right. If someone has rentals in their self-directed IRA, how is it impacted as far as unrelated business income tax, UBIT, and does it make a difference on the number or dollar amount? All right. Self-directed IRA, and it has real estate, you have no UBIT if it's just rental. That's not unrelated business income tax. Unrelated business income tax is when you're doing an active business inside a exempt organization, inside like an IRA or a church or something else, and you're running a mini mart. then they tax you on it because it's unrelated business income. It's not related to your exempt purpose, so they tax you on it. Passive income is always going to be, it's almost always exempt. There's possible if you have some royalty stuff, it's possible if you're advertising that the exempt organization be taxed. But for your IRA, for rentals, don't worry about it. Here's what you worry about when you're doing an IRA with rentals. It's usually the case, and this is what we've seen, is that people will oftentimes want to lever that real estate. And in an IRA, you have something called unrelated debt finance income, UDFI. An unrelated debt finance income means, or just call it debt finance income, the portion of the profits that are coming from the debt. So if I have a piece of property, I have a 50% loan on it, then 50% of its income is going to be taxable to the IRA. It's not allowed to have that type of loan and not pay tax on it. A 401k is allowed to have that type of loan and it doesn't pay tax on it. So this is one of those weird things where you're like, hey, should I be an IRA or a 401k? More often than not in our world, you're going to want to be the 401k. It has different rules. And one of the big ones is the ability to use debt. Can I have recourse debt in a 401k or IRA? And for those of you who don't know what recourse debt is, recourse means I can go after you. I have recourse and I can go, and you're basically a personal guarantee, personal guarantor. You cannot have recourse debt. Now that you know you can't have recourse debt, can I have non-recourse debt in an IRA or a 401k? What is non-recourse? Non-recourse means you can't hold the person responsible. There's no personal guarantor. You can only go after the property. So the property, it's truly asset-based lending. There's nobody on the hook for that loan if it goes south. A typical non-recourse loan in a plan is they're going to look at the other plan assets. And so they're going to secure the other plan assets. So they're going to make sure that they're not over-leveraged. In other words, they're not going to give you a 99% loan to value. They're going to give you like a 60% loan to value or 50% loan to value. You can have recourse debt, but here's the trick. In an IRA, that non-recourse debt creates debt finance income. So you have to pay tax on the portion that you're making, but it doesn't disqualify your plan. In a 401k, you do not pay the debt financed income. I hold some assets in an LLC, but you don't pay tax until the withdrawal, correct? No, if you have debt finance income, you're paying it in the year in which the debt finance income. You actually file a 990T.
990T.
Yeah. So you actually have to report it. All right. I have some assets in an LLC that is a day trading entity. If this generates sizable profits, what options are out there to redistribute funds from one LLC and several entities to separate investments? Well, you can always move. If it's yours, it's like an LLC is a safe. So I can always move it from one safe to another. There's no tax implication. That was one of the questions we had earlier. I can always put money in, take it out. Somebody was talking about an opportunity zone. The opportunity zone's awesome. It's where you take capital gains and invest them in the opportunity zone. It's actually called the growth opportunity zone. And you defer the tax on that income. The max amount you can defer that tax is until 2025 right now. And you get a portion of that is non-taxable. And then the growth, if you leave it in the opportunity zone for 10 years, all that growth in the gains on the investment itself are tax-free. That's pretty interesting. So growth opportunity zone, we'll be talking about that as they give us more information. I like your opportunity zone discussion and think about a bank. I loan out funds to other LLCs to use. You could do that. Then it's interest, unless it's all you, in which case you don't charge yourself interest. I am told that funds in an LLC are much like funds in a savings account. I pay taxes on the gains my funds make, and funds can be withdrawn at any time. That is true, as long as it's disregarded or taxed as a partnership. So I want to make sure that we're very clear. LLCs that are partnerships are disregarded, yes, you can do that. If it's an LLC taxed as a corporation or LLC taxed as an S-corp, little bit different. An S-corp, probably not a huge difference.
Yeah, I mean, you can even pull securities out, even if it's a partnership, pull securities out and put them somewhere else. But like Toby's saying, if it's an S-corporation or corporation, if you pull securities out of a corporation, you have to recognize gain immediately.
It sucks.
So
appreciated assets is considered wages, right?
Right.
So use an example.
So we had a client who had a couple hundred thousand dollars of securities in a corporation, wanted to move it somewhere else. And we tried to explain to him that if he pulls those securities out that are now worth, $250, and he's only got a basis of $100,000, he's going to have capital gains of $125,000 in that corporation. So the corporation will pay gains. And then for you to take it out, that's got to come from somewhere also, either a salary or loan repayments or dividends. It doesn't work out well.
No bueno. So don't, you know, so the other one is people that put real estate in an S corp and then they need to take it out to refi it or something. All that appreciation is wages. It's horrific. And so we all oftentimes say, hey, if you're going to do the S corp, it's cool. It's still, the capital gains still flow down to you. It's just, you can't take it out. You got to leave it in there.
And we seem to be running into that more and more where the banks are wanting
to take it out.
To take it out of the LLCs and stuff.
They got horribly hosed during the downturn of people doing weird stuff. And, you know, so what would happen is I would do a finance in an entity, say I'm the owner, and then I would sell Jeff my ownership in the entity. And the bank had no idea that I no longer, the guy that they were dealing with, they gave the loan to in their mind, had sold his interest. They have no idea. So one day Jeff comes back in and says, by the way, I'm the owner of this LLC, not the guy that you loaned the money to. No bueno. They don't like that.
If you are a real estate investor, trader, or business owner who wants to lower your taxes, protect your assets, and build future wealth, then you need to attend the next 3-day tax and asset protection event sponsored by Anderson Business Advisors. At the event, podcast hosts Clint Coons, Toby Mathis, and Michael Bowman will discuss the art of building generational wealth, ninja equity stripping strategies to discourage lawsuits, the reason to forget LLCs for real estate, tax strategies to stay out of the IRS crosshairs, avoid the joint venture chamber of horrors, and much more. The Anderson Advisors Tax and Asset Protection event is held monthly throughout the country and via live stream. Join us for the next 3-day tax and asset protection event and network with other investors and business owners while learning strategies to build your wealth and help you sleep better at night with a solid peace of mind knowing you have prepared for anything. Learn about the next event dates and locations by going to AndersonAP.com and register today. That's AndersonAP.com to register. AndersonAP.com.
All right, we got a lot of questions to go through. So if you have questions, you can always email them in. All right, I did a cash out refinance from my residence to invest in private lending or to buy rentals. California only allows $750,000 to deduct interest expense for resident. That's actually the new federal rule. For the portion that is more than $750,000, can I deduct the interest as investment expense? All right, so here's the rule. And Jeff, I'm Hobarting. But I deal with this stuff all the time. Your new limit is, unless you owned your house prior to, like during 2017 and perhaps during the first quarter of 2018, if your loan was already in process before December 15th of 2017, don't try to remember this stuff. Just know that if you're in that weird period, you may qualify, then you're up to $1 million. But it has to be for acquisition indebtedness. And acquisition indebtedness means I bought the house or I improved the house. That's for the mortgage portion to be deductible on your Schedule A, which is your itemized deduction. If you are using the money for something else, then it has to be deductible on that something else. So for example, if I am buying rental real estate, then what is it, the 4506 or something like that, the interest, you'd be writing off the interest on your Schedule E, essentially, against the income from that rental real estate.
Right.
You are no longer writing off your mortgage interest personally as the individual residing in it. You are now writing it off as part of an investment. Anything you want to add on that?
No, I mean, if we're talking about buying a piece of investment property, like you're just going out and buying raw land, hoping that it'll go up in value, then it would be considered investment interest and go back on Schedule A. But typically, we want to keep it. If it's in a business interest or rental property or something like that, we want to keep it there.
Yep. So, you know, again, Canadians have been dealing with this for a lot longer than us guys. You cannot write off interest if it's not for your home in Canada unless it was used for an investment. So people would actually have to go refi their houses. They get all the cash they could, pay down their house, refi it so they could show that they used it for an investment so they could actually write off the interest. I think it was called a Scotch transaction. It's weird. But hey, I'm not Canadian. All right, say I deducted, this is another question. Say I deducted a newsletter subscription in 2017, but received a refund for it in 2018. Do I need to add this back as income in 2018 or no? If you wrote it off, and it means your basis is zero, gave you the money back, what does that sound like?
Income.
Income. It is income. Same time as I see people saying, hey, what if I reimburse myself for my cell phone out of two companies? They each reimburse me 100%. I said, well, you can reimburse yourself up to your expense. Anything above that is income, so it becomes taxable. So, yes, you would report it, but only your cash basis taxpayer. So you'd report it in the year that you received the money back. Can I write off costs for rehabbing out of the country? Oh, this sounds like something for Jeff. Can you write off U.S. taxes?
Yeah, I mean, you do have an investment in another country.
Worldwide profits, baby.
So, yes. If it's income-producing property, you're going to be reporting that in the United States. So any expenses you have on that property will go towards that also.
But if you're rehabbing properties, it sounds like dealer activity and active business. I may be a little interested. Like, I probably want to be looking at structures in the Bahamas, if that's where it is. I'd be looking at something that's taxable there so you don't get into treaties and all sorts of fun stuff. Do I have to pay $800 off the top to the franchise tax board when we start our corporation?
No. California has an exemption to corporations their first year only.
Yep. And that $800, which this is, if you like tax cases, there's Veritas One, there's Veritas Two, there's Northwest Energetic Services, there's Bakersfield Mall, and they're all versus your friendly, but they keep suing the Board of Equalization. It's $800, and they say that's the minimum tax, but they say really it's a fee, because if it was a tax, then it would be an unconstitutional tax because it's not attached to the income. So they keep trying to call it a fee, they lose, and then they change the law a little bit, and they lose again. Anyway, so that's just an aside. California is kind of evil. All right, we live in Washington. We have a Nevada C Corp, which fully owns a Washington LLC and employs the kids. What are the recommended strategies to optimize for college tuition? Wow. So you're doing a great thing. You are going to run them through payroll. When you're applying for things like scholarships, if it's going to be based on income, you're going to show that income. You're going to show their returns. But those kids should, like, most of that income is going to probably be underneath the standard deduction. Right now it's $12,000. They're going to pay zero, and they're going to pay very little on any amounts over that. Plus, if you're smart, you're putting some of that money in a Roth IRA, and they're never going to pay tax on that. It's smart to do this with your kids. If I pay tuition out of my tax bracket, it's coming out of my highest tax bracket. If I'm in the highest tax bracket, that's 37%. My kids pay for their tuition and they're working for the company and they have to do something, then they pay it at their tax bracket, which quite often is zero. So I do this with my own daughter. And last year, I think we paid $500 in taxes total for the year. And it would have cost me, I don't know, $8,000 if I was doing it, but she has to do something. She has to actually work for the company and do stuff for the company. So other stuff you could do to optimize is defer into a retirement plan. So if you want to do a 401k, they can put the first $18,500 of their income, they can defer it. You're still reporting it. I'm not sure it'll have an impact on scholarships or not. I've not seen it have much of an impact, but just, you know, that's what I'd be doing. Is the benefits far outweigh anything with this, you know, on the scholarship side. I mean, it is huge. Here's one. I lent money to a real estate flipper. She gave me a promissory note, but it was not recorded with the deed of trust. Now she is in default. Can I foreclose? When you loan money to a flipper with no deed of trust, that's called a gift. I'm just kidding. You need to make sure that you're documenting it. You cannot foreclose until you actually file your secured interest. So you got to file it. And then, yes, you can actually start foreclosure proceedings if you want, if they don't pay it. You definitely want to make sure that when you're getting notes, there's something called first in time, first in right. You want to make sure your note's recorded and you have your deed of trust against that house. Otherwise, somebody else could go slap theirs on first. There's also places where they get priority. So like in Nevada, for example, the HOAs get super liens. They actually step in front of the primary lender. Sounds weird, but it's true. So you want to make sure that you're documenting your loan and covering yourself as best you can. Make sure that you're getting a personal guarantee. And if they have any other assets, you may want to slap a lien on those too. All right. With a new company, there's quite a lot of expense reimbursement. Since I don't have a lot of revenue yet, I haven't paid it back. Is it okay to carry it over a year, or should I go ahead and pay it back even though I'm still in the red? Jeff, this sounds like you. So should they pay it back or carry it forward? Can I pay myself, reimburse myself in a future year? And the answer is yes. You could reimburse yourself whenever. The question really becomes, do I want to capture all my startup expenses in the first year?
I think you do. You want to capture as many expenses as possible, even if you're not getting directly reimbursed right away.
Yeah. You have two choices. Whatever you fund a company, you can fund it with your cash, and then it's going to have a loss, and it's going to carry that loss forward if it's a C-Corp. If it's an S-Corp, you could actually take that loss. I contributed $20,000. That's my basis, and it loses $20,000, then technically I'd have a $20,000 loss on with an S-Corp. Usually we're seeing this in C-Corps, and you just carry it as a payable and a receivable. It's payable to you. You would say, hey, it owes me some money. It's kind of like this. I always use Krispy Kremes in my examples. Somebody, like I go out for Anderson, and I bring in 12 dozen Krispy Kremes for a meeting or something, and Anderson says, hey, I'll pay you back, but we don't have the money right now. It doesn't mean that it goes away. It means that I'm sitting there waiting for them to pay me back. If they pay me back in 2 years, all it means is they can't write that off as a deduction until they pay me back. So they're not going to have a loss if I'm carrying it as an IOU. If I give them the money to buy the donuts and they buy the donuts, they get the loss right away, even though they haven't returned my money to me. They could return that money to me at any time. For me, it's always going to be tax neutral. Do I need to be on payroll with my real estate income, or can I just take distributions from my LLC? This is regarding Trump's 20% deduction on the plan. If it's investment real estate, you never have to take a salary as long as it's rental real estate. If it's flipping and it's in an S-Corp, then you would have to take some salary if you're taking distributions. But I don't want to twist you. This sounds like it's just an LLC with rental property. You do not have to take it. The 20% is for 2018 onward. I think that it has a sunset clause at the end of 2025. All right, here's a really long one. Let me see if I can condense this. I have a Wyoming LLC that is a sole member of a second LLC that is a disregarded entity. I funded the Wyoming with $8,500 and the Wyoming funded the other. Anderson does my bookkeeping. QuickBooks balance sheet shows an owner equity 100% of $16,500. This is offset of balance sheet with capital contribution. Other, while this does end up with net equity of $85,000, which is correct, it gives the impression of the equity, which is incorrect. Is there a different way of handling? Do you see what they're doing?
Yeah, I mean, this is what we call, anytime you have a combined financials or tax returns, you may have a payable from one to the other where you've lent money to the other company. But when you do the combined financial or tax return, this is what you call an eliminating entry. The one, if you lent $8,500 to one, those two entries are going to offset each other, and it's going to be zero on your tax return.
Yeah, so he's looking at it saying, hey, they took the $8,000 that I put into the second and added it to the $8,500 that I put in the first. So it's only $8,500, and then $8,000 went to the second LLC.
Yeah, I think you need to clarify that it was the same money.
We're doing it. We'll take a look at it. All right. Can SMLLC, single member LLC, disregarded entity under a MMLLC, which is a multi-member LLC, taxed as a partnership, be converted to a single multi-member LLC taxed as an F? You guys are killing me. So what you're really saying, Billy, is can I spin off a single member LLC, make it into a multi-member LLC, and change it to an S-Corp? The answer is yes. And we just have to make sure that we follow the S-Corp rules, which means I got to be natural persons owning it, resident aliens. So if it's from somebody out of the country that they reside in the United States, in certain trusts, and even a certain single member LLCs. All right. Since rental real estate is included for the 20%, are you also required to be a rep for that to be true? No, it's just you automatically get it. High-tech network engineer doesn't qualify as special services. So if you're a network engineer and it's just you, then I would say probably yes. If you have a company and it's not so much you, but your company has its own service, like it's lots of people and it's just known, then the answer is no. then you're not.
Yeah, there were some specific carve-outs. I think the architects got a carve out of this. But there's a few industries that have been specifically exempted from those specialized industries.
Mm-hmm. I'm not sure. But software engineer, I would say that if it's just you, chances are you are going to be under the special services. When I file taxes, the taxes for the rental property show up on my tax return on a schedule form. That is Schedule E. I am almost $300,000 with my real estate and other income as a single woman. Well, I think we already talked about this one. Is there anything I can do to reduce my taxable income? Yes, Janet, you can make contributions to qualified retirement plans. You can make contributions to charities, including your own. You can make contributions to C-Corp if it has a business relationship. So there are lots of things you can do. Or if you have anybody that you need to pay salaries to, like kids or somebody that's working with you, that would be something else you could do to lower the taxable income. What about an IUL as a tax-deferred or tax-deferred compensation for my property management income? That would not work. An IUL is tax-neutral, although you can do tax-deferred compensation where it's taxable to the entity and it's not taxable to you under certain circumstances. So if I do tax-deferred income, like, hey, I'm taking deferred compensation, I need to be able to lose it.
Right.
Usually a non-compete is going to be the thing that makes it work. And so we use these especially in the nonprofit world where somebody says, I don't want to be paid. I want to work, but I do want to get paid eventually for all the work I'm doing now. So rather than pay me this year, pay me when I'm 65 and, you know, maybe I wipe it out or not. But as long as I have a non-compete with that you're saying, hey, basically, if you go work for somebody else in a competing industry, you lose all that deferred compensation, you should be good. I purchased a new computer that costs less than $2,500. Is that a straight expense in the current tax year or some weird thing, depreciation thing? Dean, it's called a Section 179 deduction. You can buy up to $1 million. You're good. You can write it all off. Yeah, otherwise, that would be depreciated. And they also have 100% bonus depreciation. So we're going to catch it no matter what. And bonus depreciation is if it's less than 15-year property, you could write it off this year. You're not required to. Somebody says, is 199A or that 20% a 20% tax deduction or a 20% tax reduction? No, it's a 20% deduction against your qualified business income. So the net effect could be much more than 20% depending on your tax bracket. If you're not in a high tax bracket, then the net effect won't be huge. So if I'm in the highest tax bracket in a state that's taxing me where I'm at 50%, that 20% deduction could be worth a ton. It could be worth significant amounts, especially if I'm in a company that's not a specialized service and I meet the requirements. I could have hundreds of thousands of dollars of qualified business income being exempted, and that could be worth hundreds of thousands of dollars to me from a tax standpoint. My self-directed IRA received a K-1 for net rental loss for a passive investment of $50,000. Do I need to file a 990T to show loss? Does the IRA custodian sign the return or can I sign? So,
well, here's what happens. If your IRA is a partner in a partnership, that partnership is required to issue a K-1 to all of its partners. That doesn't mean you have to do anything with the K-1 in your IRA. You're not going to recognize any taxable income until you actually start taking money out of the IRA. Especially since this is a rental property we're talking about.
Cool. Hey, this is a really good one. And by the way, if you ever do a 990T and it's a self-directed IRA, your custodian does have to sign it. And they like to charge you for that. 401k, 401k. All right, I have a C-Corp with accumulated losses and would rather close it than repurpose it. Is there a way to deduct the loss on my personal taxes? Is it possible? The answer is yes. It's called a 1244 election. It should have been made when you issued your stock. If Anderson did your C Corp, we already did that because I do it with every single corporation. You can then write off as a single person up to $50,000 or up to $100,000 married filing jointly, and it can be offset, can be used to offset even your W-2 income.
And going back to one of the earlier questions, this is one reason we want to start recognizing reimbursements and stuff as early as possible.
Yeah.
To establish those debts to you early on.
Yep. And I had this happen. We actually had the one time this was ever audited was because his accountant refused to give him a $67,000 deduction. It was one of our clients who was a trader who was ready to launch and go into his business. And then his employer made him an offer he couldn't refuse and gave him a whole bunch more money. He took a $67,000 loss. He had never made a dollar in the corporation. We went under audit. We won. Yay. took 2 seconds because it was a single letter and we gave him the law, and it's a statute. And the IRS is just a policing agency. If there's a statute that's clear, they don't sit there and fight with it. And he got a $38,000 reimbursement. What do you call it?
Refund.
Refund. Yeah. Interested in doing sandwich lease options. What is the best business structure? And what document can you provide to protect myself from seller suing me if tenant buyer stops paying rent or if tenant buyer trashes home? Oh, that's a tough one. You're literally leasing it and then releasing it with the right to buy. Let me think about this one. How am I going to do this? I'm going to be doing that through an entity. The way you protect yourself is you keep very little amounts of asset in that entity so that if you're sued, it's not you, it's the entity itself, and the entity doesn't have much to lose. That's a tough one. I tend to stay away from stuff like that. I want to buy the property, and then you do a lease option, and it's in an LLC.
Make sure you have insurance.
Yep, make sure you have insurance too. That could happen. So the tenant trashes the place, and somebody else says, hey, wait a second. I mean, there's always risk. What you do is you just keep it to a low. Is it hard to set up classes in QuickBooks? Does Anderson do this? It's not hard, and yes, we do it. How long does it take to set up a class in QuickBooks?
You'd have to ask the bookkeepers.
Jeff's such an accountant. Yeah, it's actually very
Actually, quick. The bookkeepers are very good at it. They do it all the time. So yeah.
It's literally all you're doing is setting up another class. It's almost like a revenue class. So you might have revenue that comes in from plumbing and then selling products in your plumbing business, and then hey, I have one that's a consulting, and that might be another class. It's literally takes 2 seconds. What if the Wyoming LLC owns a C Corp, which owns an LLC? I don't know what that means, but what it would mean is, I imagine for the 199A, so what it's going to look at is the C Corp owns an LLC, that's not going to be qualified for the 20% deduction. The LLC that owns a C Corp, if it's doing other activities, might qualify for the deduction. Here's the problem. In the qualified business income, the part I didn't tell you about is what is qualified business income. Dividends, interest, capital gains are not included in that definition. So if you're issuing out interest from a C Corp to the LLC that flows under your return, you're not going to be getting the 20%. If you set up QuickBooks with a single entity and use classes to separate the income, can you also print a balance sheet by class?
Yes, you can do it if the balance sheet is also classified.
Okay. We're good at this. We're getting there. We only have about 200 more questions to go. Oh, shoot. Where did I just go? I'm just teasing. We've gone through about 3/4 of them. What is Jeff's last name? Webb, W-E-B-B. I have a rental company. This will be my first year doing taxes. What can I expect to pay on my capital gains? What are some determining factors? So, Isaac, if you're a rental company and you're selling company, like if you have capital gains, it's going to be depending on whether you sold it within a year or after a year. If it's less than a year, it's going to be ordinary income to you. If it's over a year, it's going to be taxed at either 0%, 15%, or 20%. If you make over $250,000, you're going to get to add on another 3.8% and then whatever your state tax is. And what are the determining factors? How much you make. If you're in below married filing jointly less than, what, $77,000, your capital gains rate is zero. So all those things come into it. So you can always write us at webinar@AndersonAdvisors. If you want to ask yourself specific questions. I'm in the process of setting up QuickBooks chart of account for my C Corp. I have a construction biz and a hair salon that are DPAs of the C Corp. I am flipping single family residence held in a Wyoming LLC. I have sub expense and sub income accounts. This one we may want to answer next week because this is kind of cool. Let's talk about sub accounts. I'm just going to table that one unless you want to jump on it.
No, I think there was a couple issues in there.
Yep. But you don't pay tax until the withdrawal, correct? That was with regards to the IRA. Steve, you do need an accountant, and yes, you don't pay the tax until you withdraw out of an IRA. If you have unrelated business income tax or debt finance income out of an IRA, you pay it in the year that it was generated. Can I set up an entity to receive W-2 income and max out top FICA? Yes, but you can't do it out of a self-directed IRA. No. The reason being is that you are a disqualified person, so you cannot do that unless you do something called a ROBS transaction, R-O-B-S, and that's going to be a major topic for another day. That's if your IRA invests in a C-Corp that you set up, and there are ways to do it, and then you could actually pay yourself. So there. I recently rolled over a 401k to equity trust IRA account, lending funds to other investors, charging interest. Is interest income taxable to the IRA? No, you can do that all day long. and equity trust is having to sign all your docs. My recommendation would be to set up your own 401k so you can sign the loan documents. Somebody says, how many times a year can you roll over from 401k to IRA or reverse rollover? It depends on whether you're doing a direct rollover. Jeff,
you can do trustee to trustee every day if you want.
Yep.
Meaning you're going from TD Ameritrade to Bank of America. You can do those as long as it's directly being transferred. You can pull the money out once to yourself once every 12 months, and it's a rolling 12-month period. Mm-hmm. So if I pulled it out today, then I wouldn't be able to do it again until next October.
All right. Somebody asked, can I roll individual stock holding into Roth trading account if the current value is under 550 limit, and how? The answer would be really no. You're going to have to liquidate the holdings, open up a new account in the Roth IRA, and then contribute the 5,500. It's a pain in the butt, I know, but I don't make the rules. It's this whole Bank Secrecy Act and all this stuff since they flew planes into trade centers. All right. Is the old rule dead on personal residences 2 out of 5 years? No, that's still the rule. And we still use it like crazy. That's Section 121.
They were talking about making it 5 out of 8 years, and that got thrown out. So it's still the old 2 out of 5 rule.
Yep. Do my startup costs carry over 2 years if my net was negative? It's actually 20-something years.
Is it 15 20? Years.
15 years now. So, Nate, you can carry forward your startup costs. Is it 15?
Yeah.
15. Hey, wait a second. I have an S-Corp. They keep charging me the 800 fee every year. I thought I always heard you say, no, they can't do that. No, you get the 800 minimum. It's just lots of people say that's an unconstitutional tax, Ryan. But that's your 800 minimum tax fee, whatever they call it. And they like to hit you. Is it best to hire kids under 18 to work for an LLC or C-Corp? If you are a sole proprietor, you don't have to worry about payroll taxes. If you're a C-Corp, you're going to have to do some payroll taxes. But either way, you're gonna benefit from.
And wages are not subject to the kiddie tax either.
Yeah, the kiddie tax is. I'm just talking about the kiddie tax.
Well, the kiddie tax says that if your children have what they call unearned income, capital gains, interest, dividends, things like that, up to a or over a certain amount, I believe it's $2,100, then they're taxed at your tax rates, not their own. Mm-hmm. In this case, the W-2 would be taxed at their rate, which would be.
Zero.
Yep.
All right. How can I make consultant work earned income? You work. That's what consultant work is. It is absolutely earned income no matter what. I am flipping houses via an S-Corp. Is there danger in the S-Corp being labeled as a dealer? No. In fact, that's what we like. We want the S-Corp to be a dealer because it's an active business. We don't want you to be the dealer. And because you have an S-Corp now, you won't be a dealer, so you can still be an investor.
Right. The status doesn't flow through to you.
Yep. How do I get real estate professional designation with the IRS? You don't. It just you get to claim it when you personally spend more than 750 hours a year on real estate through any of your businesses, aggregate them all together, including all your properties. You have to make an aggregation election. If your accountant screws this up, then you lose this. And it has to be the number one use of your personal time, right?
Right.
No other professional services can be more than it. So 750 hours plus number one use of time, and you make your aggregation. So if you're doing 1,000 hours something else as a cook, and you're doing 999 hours as a real estate investor, guess what? You're not a real estate professional. You flip those around, you do 1,000 hours as a real estate investor and 999 hours as a cook, yes, you are a real estate professional, and you can write off all of your losses. As an FYI, the Wyoming to which I'm referring above is okay, somebody's asking a question. So, Jeff, that's the one where, again, we're going to want to look at it.
Right.
Is the 20% tax break from pass-through entity commuted on the Schedule E? No, we don't know exactly where it's going to go. It's going to be on the 1040 as far as what I've seen on the proposed tax forms. They've only given us proposed tax forms, so we don't know for sure, but it looks like it's going to be on page one of your 1040. Because it's passed through, so you claim it. After you take all the other income, then you're just going to take this big old write-off, 20% of that dollar amount. If you are a limited partner on a multi-member limited liability company, taxed as a partnership on a development deal, and a general contractor is the general partner, there's no such thing as a general partner on a multi-member LLC. It would be a manager. Would self-employment earnings on a line 14A of the K-1 from the partnership be zero, even if the ordinary business income on the K-1 be 1 million. So what he's saying is if there's somebody else who's the active participant in the partnership, do I have to pay self-employment tax on that partnership if it's a development activity?
Not if you're not the managing member or a managing member. If you're just a member not managing the company, then no, it's not self-employment income.
Mm-hmm. The problem with using QuickBooks class for legal entities, then it would be tough to use class for each property or project. Walt, are you griping about QuickBooks? It's basically, no, I get what you're saying. I think you would just make subclasses, so you'd still be able to do it.
I think what we do in those cases is we classify each property, and then we just have to know what makes up each LLC.
Yep. What if I screwed up and moved an old 401k into a self-directed IRA? Can I then convert my self-directed IRA into a 401k? Yes, especially if you set it up under your S-Corp. So if it's an old employer 401k, you're not going to be able to go back into it. If it's your 401k that you're set up and you're the trustee, you're going to welcome in your money, your self-directed IRA money in. The only way this would not work is if it's Roth. But if it's a traditional IRA, then you're fine. Because with Roth, you cannot go Roth IRA to 401k. You can go Roth 401k to Roth IRA, but you can't go back. But for traditional, you can go back and forth and back and forth. Is a refinance cash out on a rental investment considered income? No, with one caveat. If you take more money out than your basis, so if you're like a, if you're not on any of the debt and you put in $10,000 and somebody refis a big chunk of property and hands you 20, you're paying long-term capital gains on the $10,000 that exceeds your basis since you're not at risk. Isn't that cool?
Mm-hmm.
So we love rules like that. Two properties in California with more than 1 million equity. Would it be better to take primary residence $500,000 deduction and sell a rental home after converting primary residence, or do a 1031 exchange? Do we need to hold the title in a way for less taxation? This is funny. So you have two properties. If one's a primary residence and you've been living in it, in other words, I don't want to go rental and then live in it because there's going to be excluded gain. You're not going to get a bunch of benefit. But if you've actually been living in one, you can actually do the home exclusion, the 121, plus a 1031 exchange on the same property. And right. So, Sam, you're asking a very specific question. I want you to email me because there's a lot of money at play here that we can save you if you do this right. When is the $800 fee for California C-Corp charged? It's every year when you go in for renewal. Or actually when you file
it. I think the corporations are due by the 415, April 15th.
They do it just once a year?
Yeah.
And then the other ones?
A lot of people don't pay until they file the return.
Yeah. Now, let's see. Before getting Anderson to open my LLC, shouldn't I have an attorney and a CPA tell me what kind of entity I need to set up? You can absolutely talk to us. And if you want to have the type, you can actually – what we do here is if you're working with our advisors, they put in the recommendation, they do a structure, then you acquire the entities, and then it goes to an attorney, CPA, and another EA, and they look at it, make sure it's appropriate. So, yeah, you don't have to worry. You never want to just do this stuff online and just do it on your own. Always have some professional take a look at it. Can you make trust documents specifically for sandwich lease? Oh, boy. Is this somebody trying not to be held liable for their actions? I can always tell you guys. I think we already answered the sandwich lease stuff. It's just make sure you're doing it through your entity. All right. I have a Wyoming property management company. I manage my own properties, and I'm not a real estate agent. There are some real estate agents in town that would like me to list their properties for rent and for sale because of the results I've received. How can I pay myself there? It depends on your state, but if you're going to do that with your Wyoming entity, then I'm going to tell you what I would likely do. I'm either going to register that Wyoming entity in my state, in which case giving away some of the benefits, or I'm just going to, in my home state, I'm going to set up an entity that is owned by that Wyoming LLC, and magically, from a tax standpoint, they're considered the same entity. I would set up a disregarded LLC in my home state, and then I would do my activities there. But got to make sure that you're not stepping on a licensing issue.
Yeah, I think the states get real funny if you try to license an out-of-state entity as a real estate agent in that state.
You know, and it depends on whether you need to be a real estate agent in that state to list properties. Like here, you can be anybody, but if you're holding yourself out and you're acting on behalf of somebody else, they're going to want you to be a real estate broker. Is the additional 3.8% tax only on short-term capital gains or long-term capital gains? It's on any investment income. So it's the net investment income tax. So you're getting hit on a whole bunch of different types. So yeah. I don't want to think they discriminate. The only thing it's not getting hit on is your active income. So rent, royalties, dividends, interest, capital gains. How do I remain anonymous as a trustee in a wholesaling trust? Use an entity is usually the best way. If they don't let you use an entity, then you're not going to be anonymous. But remember that the trustee is not liable in most of the trusts. So at the end of the day, it's not so bad to have your name in there. We're going to end this up. Somebody says, can I pay myself an advertising fee for advertising of a rental or sale property for other agents? And say, absolutely. You can charge them any reasonable fee. If you want to do that for them and then it's actually their listing, you could absolutely do that. So you're actually in Wyoming. I would check with the real estate board to see whether you're even required to be licensed. That's a pretty unregulated state, and they let you do a lot of things. So you may be able just to go out there and hang your shingle, and the agents are just happy as clams to have you there because you get results. All right, that is it for today. So thanks, everybody. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And if you have questions, again, don't hesitate. Send it to webinar@andersonadvisors.com, and we'll get you squared away. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast. Show notes for links to everything mentioned in this episode can be found on our website at andersonadvisors.com/podcast. Be sure you subscribe to our podcast. And if you are already a subscriber, please provide us a review of what you thought of this episode.